Okay, welcome everybody. Good evening. Freilichen, Erev, Rosh Hashanah, right? Right, something like that. So, I'd like to speak this evening specifically about Aseret Yemei Teshuva, but more specifically about ways that a person could, listen carefully, not how to do Teshuva, but things that a person can do to bring themselves to get to do Teshuva. Okay, you'll see what I mean as we go. So, we called this, or I called it, I thought it was a cute title, and it actually is honest. Sometimes you write a title because you want people to come, or you want it to sound interesting, but you don't really plan on speaking about that. That's what I do on YU Torah all the time. So, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Bali Tshuva, that's the official title, but you'll see that the goal here is going to be seven aspects that will awaken a person to come to do Tshuva, to get the person wanting to do Tshuva. Basically, what I'm going to do this evening is go through a part of Sefer Shari Tshuva. Rabbeinu Yonah has Shari Tshuva. He actually has Shari a number of things. The problem is we lost almost all of them, and we're only left with a Sefer Shari Tshuva. But he originally wrote Shari this and that, and this and that, and this and that, which we lost. I was actually emailing a certain Rav who was mentioning to me that he's a bit busy this time, you know, this week, because he's preparing his drushas for Rosh Hashanah, but the problem is that he's in a place where he's spoken a number of times to the same people that come back to the same, you know, whatever the situation is, and it's frustrating because you can't reuse the stuff that you used prior because it's the same people. So he says maybe it's sort of like Hashem looking at us, we can sort of reuse the tshuva that we did last year. Like, you did that last year. Now you sort of have to figure out a new tshuva to do. It's the same Hashem was there last year, and he's here again this year, so we have to figure out new ways to find ourselves on the road to tshuva. So, that's the goal tonight. We're not going to talk about doing tshuva. We're going to talk about things that can bring a person to do tshuva. And there's a difference, and you'll see. I want to start with one very, I think it's an incredible insight into human personality, into a human religious personality, that, listen to it, it's one very short thought, and I think there's a lot in it. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that, listen carefully, that to the extent that a person needs to be motivated to do tshuva, the less that they need to motivate them to tshuva, the more sophisticated and the higher level their sensitivity to Kedusha. Or, in other words, the level of a person's neshama is inversely proportional to what they need to get them to wake up in the morning. So let me give you an example. If you have a person who, when you want to wake them up in the morning, I have different children. Some of the children wake up, you know, a little bit of sunlight streams into the room, and they're jumping all over the place. Other children, you have to smack them really hard across the face numerous times, and then maybe they'll give you one of those. So what that means is, let's say waking up is tshuva. The more sensitive soul is able to turn to do tshuva with a lighter touch. You touch them, a little bit of light comes into them, all of a sudden, they're jumping up and down doing tshuva. A less sensitive soul, a person who has a less sophisticated, a less spiritual aspect to their identity, needs more of a wake-up call. Now, what this means is that you could sort of, you, not that you should do this in your spare time, like judging people, because if you don't want Hashem to judge you and you don't want your friends to judge you, you shouldn't judge other people. But, if you happen to be in the habit of judging people, this is a great way to start looking around at people. Look at them, like analyze all your friends' lives, and see what does it take to get them to like regret something? Or what does it take to get a person to like feel bad about something? If they're people who are coarse, so it's very hard to get them to ever regret anything. People with more of a delicate soul regret things more easily. So that's the first yesod that Rabbeinu Yonah says in this. Before we get into things that awake a person to tshuva, the first thing is to realize that our goal as people who want to do tshuva should be that we shouldn't need big things to get us to do tshuva. What should get us to do tshuva is what are the midos that we should have to arouse us to do tshuva? Things that we have all the time. Things that you don't have to go out of your way to do. or things that you don't have to go out of your way to get happened to, but things that we have all within us. Yiras Shamayim, on one hand, the Avas Hashem within that's in the side of us. Those are the things that should propel us to tshuva without having to wait for a lightning bolt or a smack across the face from wherever those things might come. Now, those of you who've lived in New York City for a lot of years remember Ed Koch. Ed Koch went to shul. Do you know that? Somewhere on the Upper East Side? I forgot which shul. No, is that? Yeah, he went there? I don't remember. On the Upper East Side. Tell me about it. Was on the West Side or the East Side? That's the West Side. Right, so that's the West Side. So he went to shul the problem is, Ed Koch only went to shul when he was sick. He only went to shul when he was sick. But he went to shul. So that's an example of somebody who has a sensitivity, but there is something that needs to, you know, smack a person across the face to have that, to dwell on that sensitivity. That's not where we're aiming. We're aiming to be able to sort of come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through things that are smaller. But, nevertheless, Hashem in His kindness sends us certain things to wake us up, and we're going to go through those. There are going to be seven, that was the first, we're going to go through six more points that Rabbeinu Yonah says are things that will get us on the way. Some of them are easier to listen to, some of them are not as easy to listen to, so obviously we're not judging anybody, we're not, you know, in any which way, telling people, you know, this is because of that. But first of all, Rabbeinu Yonah says that Hashem sends difficult times to people. Tzaros. And why does a person get tzaros? Well, before we talk about a person getting tzaros, some of you know the story of Yiftach. Yiftach was rejected by his brothers, was it? I think his family. His own family, certainly his shevet had rejected him. And then they realized at one point that there was a battle that they needed to fight, and they realized that he was a person who could sort of lead this battle, and they come begging him to please lead them into battle. So what is his reaction? You guys threw me out, and now that you need me, you're calling me in to come help you. Take a hike. Get lost. That's sort of what happens when we go to shul when we get sick. Hashem sends us a tzara. Until now, we sort of haven't been so, you know, focused on whatever it is in terms of our ruchnias. So all of a sudden, Hashem sends us a whatever challenge it might be. And all of a sudden, we turn to Hashem, we do tshuva. What could Hashem say to us? All of a sudden, you need me, so now you're coming back? Take a hike. That's what he could say, but he doesn't. So that's an important thing that we should feel good about, even though, I mean, we shouldn't feel proud of it, but we should realize that Hashem is different than a Melech Basar Adam or any Basar Adam, that usually people don't appreciate when they're being used. With Hashem, it's for whatever reason, He doesn't mind being used. Even though we're in trouble and He sends us a message, all of a sudden that wakes us up, He's cool with that. He's willing to take us back, even if the only reason why we're really coming back is because we find ourselves, you know, in a troubled situation. And there's a sensitive point that I've spoken in the past about on Shabbosim, but we see from the Pesukim in Chumash so many times that what's our attitude supposed to be when we hear of, when something happens to us, or we hear of something that happens, there's such a danger, and this is just Western society, which is not based on theocracy or theology, it's just based on, you know, empiricism, that's the basis of Western society, as opposed to Eastern societies. In an empirical society, everything is a number, everything's a probability, everything has a cause and an effect. And we boil everything down to, yes, Hurricane Sandy was a superstorm that was a combination of, you know, this kind of current coming from there, and that kind of current coming from there, and the right kind of temperature, and the two things met right outside the Atlantic Ocean, just happened to hit New York City head on with winds at 100, whatever was, Hurricane Sandy was. That's all true. That's 100% true. But to not and to ignore HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand in anything and everything that happens is exactly what it says so many times in the Tavachacha, that if you treat me with keri means with happenstance, as though it just chanced, it was just, you know, luck against you, it was just the stacked possibilities were stacked against you, without realizing that things are Yad Hashem, so then we really, 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 really miss the boat. So the first goal, if God forbid, Hashem, you know, sends our way, whatever kind of tzara it is, it could be big tzaras, could be little tzaras, whatever Hashem sends our way, the first key is to realize that it's from Hashem. That itself does something, that itself makes it that the tzaras can be productive. Now, how can tzaras be productive? So I heard something else elsewhere, but I'll tell you what Rabbeinu Yonah writes right here in Shari Tshuva. Rabbeinu Yonah says that What is it that a tzara does? Well, firstly, we don't like talking like this because, again, I always remember this is a hot button topic, and rabbis especially have to be very careful that they don't get accused of saying things that offend people in this kind of area. I was once talking to somebody. I made a big mistake when I was like soon after I became a rabbi. There was a fire in their house. There was a fire in their house. Somebody in the community in Manhattan. And, you know, I was in yeshiva. And in yeshiva, there's like a phrase that we, you know, used to say. And whenever something bad happened to somebody, we say, we always, you know, would respond to that person, Zolzayna Kapara. Let it be a kapara for you. And I meant it in a caring kind of, you know, feel bad for you, at least let it be a kapara. That person had a different kind of background than, you know, I guess I had. And he took it in a very philosophical kind of, you know, intellectually curious kind of way that I was accusing him of deserving, that I'm accusing him of doing whatever evil, terrible things that Hashem had to send this fire to destroy his house. God forbid, I went out of my way to call the person to make him feel good and to, you know, see how he's doing. But because I said those words, it ended up backfiring in my face, and he was a little bit angry, and then I had to, a little bit later, I was able to explain to him. It's not, you know, I wasn't accusing him of being an evil person, and God wasn't down, striking him down with lightning. But there's a sensitivity that people have to have. But if a person, if we could not look at other people, but look at ourselves, when we encounter tzara, the first thing that we could realize is, of course, that tzaras are here to be mechaper for us. That's not accusing anybody of being bad. It's just saying that we all have whatever things that we have. And somehow tzaros could, you know, it's sort of like, I don't think they use it anymore, but when I was little, I went to Yeshiva Flatbush, and then we had a nurse's office. And the nurse was Mrs. Gang, her name was, I think. And I went, her, I think her granddaughter or her niece used to be in this shir a few years ago. A very wonderful elderly woman. And I remember two things from going to the nurse's office in elementary school. First of all, whenever you didn't feel well, she gave you Tylenol gum. So if you ever wanted to chew gum and you didn't have any money on you or whatever else, you just go to the nurse's office and say you weren't feeling well and you got Tylenol gum, which tasted good. The second thing I remember, I got a cut in like first grade or when I was very young, I got a cut in the jungle gym, the bars, the climbing bars, and I had a little gash in my hand. And I remember she took out hydrogen peroxide. I don't know. I don't think they use hydrogen peroxide because I think it just eats away too much of, like, too many layers of skin. But hydrogen peroxide on an open cut really, really, really hurts. It burns. But that's how it cleans. So, lahavdil, alfei havdalos, tzaros, or yisurin that Hashem sends to a person, God forbid, we hope it doesn't happen to anybody. But if they do happen to any of us, and we all have it in our own little ways, in our own little lives, those are there to be the hydrogen peroxide for the dirt in our lives. And that, those yisurim, those difficult times, those challenges, little by little cleanse that dirt. But you have to be really careful, because even if you turn inwards and don't evaluate and judge other people, you could also like really get yourself down, and that's not always healthy. Like, not everything that Hashem says is because you're a bad person or because you're terrible and you're evil. Sometimes Hashem wants other things for whatever reason we don't always understand. When a person is or has the strength to dig down and realize that the tzaros are being mechaper, they're somehow cleansing myself. And secondly, what else do tzaros do? Do yisurin accomplish? They also serve as a wake-up call, right? They got Ed Koch to make it to shul. So if I use whatever challenge comes my way as an impetus, as a motivation to push me to improve myself, you know what? The tzaros worked. And therefore, listen to this. There's a pasuk that you're familiar with in Havdalah. It says, you told me the beginning, Uvashem Hashem Ekra. I'll call out to Hashem in praise and thanks. What's the beginning of that pasuk? Again, Uvashem Hashem Ekra. What's the beginning of that pasuk from Havdalah? So there are actually two different psukim that end the same three words, Uvashem Hashem Ekra. One is the one that you're familiar with from Havdalah. Kos Yeshua says, I'll lift up this cup of salvation. Hashem saved me, and I'll call out to him. My friends, there's another pasuk in Tehillim, same author, that ends the exact same way, that I'll call out to Hashem in praise. Zara, v'yagon emtza, I'll find tsara and difficulty and challenge, and you know what my attitude, my reaction is? The same three words. Uvashem Hashem Ekra. And that parallelism that David HaMelech put into Tehillim is not certainly happenstance, but David HaMelech is trying to teach us a lesson. That when we're able to, sometimes we praise Hashem because things are great and happy and jovial and wonderful. And sometimes things are miserable, and still on those miserable things, if we use them right, if we have the right attitude in receiving those things, I can have the same response of gratitude somehow. This is a high level of gratitude. Thank you, Hashem, for sending me this challenge, for sending me this difficulty, because it worked. It pushed me to get me to whatever thing it had to push me to. It cleansed me from whatever I needed to be cleansed of. And that's a fabulous attitude. I think it's very empowering. I think it's very empowering. Because I remember hearing from David Pelkowitz, you know, the Dr. Pelkowitz, the psychologist who works here. So, he likes to say this. I must have heard this from him at least three times in different instances. Keli, Keli, Hashem, Hashem, Lama Azavtani. People are in trouble. People are having a hard time. What's the easiest thing? Say, Hashem, why me? Why did this happen to me? Why do you leave me? Where are you, Hashem? Where was God? And whatever happened. He said, from a psychological perspective, it's very self-defeating to ever try to figure out why I was suffering this and I got this. But if you, instead of saying, Lama, why Azavtani? But Lima, for what did you leave me? I mean, what could it be that I could build on? What could I... How could I climb from this situation of Azavtani? Lema, for what purposeful purpose Azavtani? What can I build out of it? And if we take whatever challenges we find ourselves in and use them as stepping stones to propel us forward, that could be that's a really incredible tool in our toolbox of, you know, building who we are, to really take advantage of whatever things happen to us, use them as motivations, as impetuses. Is there like impetai? No. Impetus is to push us, to propel us forward. I think that's a really wonderful tool to have in our toolbox of, you know, midos improvement. So that's the first thing that gets a person to do tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah says. Things that befall a person, sorrows, difficult times. Then, and this is one I really don't want to dwell on, because, you know, if you thought of what we talked about until now was depressing, now we're going to be really depressing, and I don't think it's healthy for people, you know, in this age group to focus on. You can focus on it in about 40, 50 years. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, the Derech HaShnia, to encourage, to bring a person to want to do tshuva, Ka'asher Yavau Yumei HaZikna. When a person gets older, and they sort of look around and realize that, you know, not, you know, all good things come to an end. And they realize that's what they're thinking when they look in the mirror. So that should hopefully push a person to improve who they are. Now, I really think it's very unhealthy for young people to focus on that, because that's just very unhealthy for people to focus on until you're in an older situation where it's more halacha l'maisa. But I want to tell you, the way Rabbeinu Yonah writes in that section where he talks about motivating ourselves to do tshuva by, you know, when we get older, the way he writes is something brilliant. And this is, I think, I spoke, my tshuva drasha last year was this point. He doesn't say that as a person gets older, they have to feel bad about all the bad things they did. The way Rabbeinu Yonah writes it, it's that when a person gets older, he or she has to contemplate all the good things that he or she could have done but didn't. And that's an incredibly different way of looking at tshuva. So when we think of tshuva, and we, you know, we have our little list of all the averus we did this year, and I, you know, wasn't careful with so-and-so's money, and I heard so-and-so, and I spoke lashon about so-and-so, and I didn't die, and I wasn't so careful about Shabbos that week, and whatever else I wasn't so careful about, and I said lashon hara that time, and those times, and I wasn't so honest, or those are all focusing on the things that I did. But that might not be the goal, or that's not the only goal of tshuva. Tshuva is equally on all the opportunities that I could have had, but I didn't take advantage as I could have. That's the incredible perspective that Rabbeinu Yonah gives us of looking back at a lifetime, seeing not just, I did this bad, but what productive things, how many lives have I touched on in a positive way, how much Torah was I able to be marbitz, how many mitzvahs was I able to encourage, how many people was I able to encourage and make them feel good and bring closer to Torah. That's how people have to look back at their lives. That's the second way to motivate a person to tshuva, when they get older. Third way, and this is going to be something very, I think, quite brilliant. Haderech HaShlishis, to motivate ourselves to do tshuva, says Rabbeinu Yonah, Ka'asher Yishma Musar HaChachamim. When a person listens to a speech. Now, there's a terrible thing that happens after people listen to speeches. You know what it's called? Depends when the speech is. Sometimes it's called Musaf, and sometimes it's called Marav. Because whatever inspiration you take, and you get, and you're uplifted, and whatever, all of a sudden you get back into the routine of, you know, davening with or without, or whatever kavanah we can muster. And then, by the end of whatever, you totally forget everything that happened. I mean, that's just the way life is. But listen to what Rabbeinu Yonah writes. Rabbeinu Yonah says, and he proves it with, I'll show you a number of proofs. If a person commits, and he's not just talking about, you know, taking inspiration and building on it, but that's what he means. When you hear something, when you hear somebody tell you, you know, we don't really like giving musar nowadays, rabbis just have to talk about Eretz Yisrael and being Jewish, but not actually telling people that they're ever doing something wrong. That's also, did you ever hear the joke that new rabbi comes to town and the president tells him, you know, what are you going to speak about, you know, on your first Shabbos? He said, well, you know, this city, I heard, is really very lax in their Shemitz Shabbos. You know, I thought maybe we talk about, you know, closing the parking lot. The president said, no, definitely don't speak about, you know, driving on Shabbos. Okay, so maybe I could talk, you know, I hear that the hashgacha in town is not really serious, people aren't careful with kashrus, and the president says, no, don't talk about going out to eat in this town. No, it's not going to work. And the list continues a few times, and then the rabbi is absolutely exasperated and says, I can't talk about Shabbos, I can't talk about kashrus, I can't talk about all these things. What should I talk about? Talk about Judaism. So that's what rabbis have to do today. We can't tell people you're doing this wrong or you're not doing this much. We just have to talk about Judaism and Eretz Yisrael, of course. And those are both wonderful things. But there was a time when rabbis gave musar, and that was the goal of them. That was why they were hired, to give musar and to paskin. Nowadays it's a little bit different. But listen to what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Rabbeinu Yonah says that if a person commits, there's a commitment involved. Commits to, and this is a big, it's a tall order, but it's a very big payoff. So the order is very tall and it's not easy. But when you hear the payoff, you'll see what's involved. If a person commits, right now or whenever it will be, that they accept upon themselves whatever the Chachamim tell them to change, to improve, to do, they accept it upon themselves and they make a commitment right now. It's the kind of commitment to make on Yom Kippur. That right now I accept upon myself whatever Chachamim will say to me, whatever I am taught or whatever I am instructed by whoever is in the position to do so, at that moment, at the moment of the commitment, Hashem gives them schar, not for the commitment, but for anything and everything that the musar that will be told to them for the rest of their lives. And Rabbeinu Yonah brings three proofs to this concept. That when a person makes a commitment to do something, even though he or she hasn't yet done it, they receive reward for that, which they haven't yet done, because they committed to do it. And this, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and ladies, is actually the power and the strength behind the concept of a Kabbalah on Aser Yimei Tshuva, behind the Kabbalah of Yom Kippur. It's not just that you're committing to do something and now your year is going to be different because you're going to be doing this. No. It's the commitment at the moment of Yom Kippur. When you make that commitment, you're already getting schar now for whatever you committed to. And he brings three proofs. Some of them you know. Tell me, what are his proofs that you could get reward for something you haven't done? You could get reward if you made a commitment, even though you didn't do it. Yes, what? Na'aseh v'nishma. Exactly, na'aseh v'nishma. They didn't know what they were going to accept upon themselves. And they said, we're going to do it, and they're rewarded thereby. Something for Pirkei Avos. That's a great point. Machshava kamaisa. There is a concept, the Gemara Kedushin says, that when a Jew intends to do a mitzvah and for whatever reason was unable to do it, like, let's say your mother says, could somebody get me a roll of paper towels? Something spilled somewhere, and you run and get the roll of paper towels. You run to her, and you didn't realize that your little brother beat you to it. So you didn't do anything. You didn't help her. She already cleaned up the mess. But there, your machshava, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is mitzarif, it considers it as though you did it. There it's a little bit different, because there you did something, or you intended to do something, and for that which you intended to do, it's more of a specific action. Here we're saying that there's a commitment to do anything and everything that Chazal, that the rabbis, that the Chachamim will teach me in the course of my life, I'm already getting schar for as of now. So this is a little bit bigger. Where do we find in Pirkei Avos a line that indicates that you get more reward than that which you actually did? Hint? Anyone have an idea? Okay, hint number one. The line starts with kol. What? I can't hear. Yeah, kol. Anybody? Another hint? Kol she? No, no. But that does start kol she. Kol she. Kol she ma'asav. Mirubim mechachmaso. Anybody whose actions are greater than his knowledge. How in the world could you do more than you know to do? How is that possible to have a situation, to have a scenario, to have a person where they're doing more than they have a knowledge base to do? You can't do more than you know what to do. Now, if you don't know the chumras, you can't do the chumras. If you don't know the mitzvahs, you can't do the mitzvahs. If you don't know the halacha, you can't do the halacha. Answers Rabbeinu Yonah. This is talking about a person who committed to do whatever they were taught, so even though they don't know it, they're already, their actions or their reward for their actions are already here on the table, even though they haven't done those things. Those are two proofs. There's actually a third proof, I'll tell you quickly. When Bnei Yisrael were commanded to bring Pesach, Korban Pesach in Yetzias Mitzrayim, does anyone know when they were commanded to bring that Korban Pesach? What day of the month were they commanded to get a Korban Pesach, get a sheep, tie it to your bed? That's when they had to tie the sheep, I think. When did they get the tzivui? I think it was Rosh Chodesh. Yeah, that's why we say in Haggadah, Yacham Rosh Chodesh. I might think you should start doing Haggadah from Rosh Chodesh. Why? Because that's when Bnei Yisrael started to be instructed to bring the Korban Pesach. You know what the Pasuk says on that very day of Rosh Chodesh Nisan in Mitzrayim? Vayalchu vayasu Bnei Yisrael. They went ahead and did it. No, they didn't. That's a big fat lie, Hashem. You should be more careful with your words, Hashem. That's a big fat lie. They didn't do it for another 2 weeks. Rather, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's teaching us that since they committed to do Korban Pesach and put the blood on the mezuzahs, that's already considered Vayelcha Vayesu, as though they did it, even though all they had was a commitment. So that's the third incredible way that a person can bring themselves to do tshuva by hearing things from Chacham, and Rabbeinu Yonah adds this point that the commitment to listen to whatever they'll hear will again be an incredible credit in their tally. The fourth is a little funny. It sounds funny, but I'll give you some examples and we'll see that it makes more sense than it sounds. We'll start like this. This past week was Nitzan Vayelech. The week before that was Ki Teitze. Now, could you remind Kisava, right? Kisava had the Tochacha, right? What was going through your mind during Shishi 2 weeks ago? I'll tell you what was going through my mind. This is a really long aliyah. This aliyah is 62 psukim long. When will we be finished with this? This is the long aliyah in all of Chumash. 62 psukim, 66 psukim, my goodness gracious, wow, it's incredible that this Baal Kori isn't making any mistakes because the words are actually hard. Kadachas and Shachefes and Dalekes, they're all hard words. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, the fourth way that a person could be motivated to do tshuva is when you listen to the Torah. Psukim say scary things. A Navi warns you. A Navi, you know, he says, if you do Averus, I'm going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. When you read that, we read it as cute story. But if we read it and actually take things to heart, imagine how different our Kriyas HaTorahs could be. Instead of Haftorah being a time for me to... Well, I have to usually prepare my speech. That's what I do during Haftorah. I don't know if you do during Haftorah. Whatever you do during Haftorah, imagine what it would be if we would listen to the Haftorah and like start to shake a little bit. Oh my God, the Navi is saying that if you do something, you'll get punished. You know, things there, you know. That's just a very different way of looking at listening to a Pasuk in Chumash. A very different way of listening to a Haftorah. Now let me tell you a story. The story goes like this. The story happened, and I'll tell you how many years ago. What happened, give or take? So there's this fellow named Ezra and his right-hand man in Nehemiah, and they bring Bnei Yisrael back from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael after we were in Golos Bavel for 70 years. So they come to Eretz Yisrael, and even though our school would have us think that everything before, you know, the advent of TV was wonderful and hunky-dory, believe it or not, there was a lot of terrible stuff happening in the time of Ezra Nehemiah. There was assimilation, and there was terrible intermarriage, and Bnei Yisrael didn't know diddly squat about Torah. Diddly squat. They didn't know anything. There were Levim who knew a little bit. I guess that was like the more intelligentsia, the more, the more elite social class of Levim. But in terms of Bnei Yisrael, they knew absolutely nothing. So Nehemiah does the following. He sets up a bima out of wood, just like we have over here, a wooden platform, and he stands on top. And he says, everybody, I want you to come on what day of the year? Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, I invite everybody to come, and we're going to find some very fascinating halachas about Rosh Hashanah from the following story. And it's also going to tie into what Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us about how to bring ourselves to the tshuva. So, Nehemiah gets us on the bima, and starting at Netz HaChama until Chatzos. Okay, for 6 hours, he does the following. He reads Chumash. And guess what Bnei Yisrael do? Guess what Bnei Yisrael do? Well, I'll tell you what Bnei Yisrael do based on the following. The Levim who were there and the people like the people in charge see what's happening, what Bnei Yisrael's reaction. I didn't tell you what the reaction was, but you'll see what the reaction was. They see what's happening to Bnei Yisrael as Bnei Yisrael are listening to Nehemiah's reading of the Torah on this wooden bima. And they run around to all the people in Bnei Yisrael telling them, Hayom Kadoshu Lashem Elokeichem. Today's a holy day, guys. It's Rosh Hashanah. Al tisablu, don't be an avelus. Va'al tivku, don't cry, guys. In other words, what was their reaction to listening to Chumash being read? They cried. They were misabel. They realized that there's so much that all these mitzvahs that they hear, every time we hear the words, V'yareisa me'alokecha, and leiner. So what do we hear? We hear, okay, the leiner was a little too loud, it wasn't loud enough. Imagine if we turned into ourselves and said, there's a mitzvah for me to have Yiras Shemayim. Or, V'yisem kadoshem, ki kadosh ne'at. Wow, there's a mitzvah for me to be kadosh. I mean, these are big things, but this is a new way for us to listen to Kriyas HaTorah. Now, by the way, we see something very important from these psukim. I'll tell you a story within this story. I think the story was of the Netziv. I heard the story this week. I think it was the Netziv. The Netziv apparently cried every morning during davening, right before Kriyas Shema, during Ava Rabba, when he would ask Hashem, to understand, to learn Torah. He would cry every single morning of the year to ask Hashem to learn Torah better, to understand, to plumb the depths of Torah. Except one day a year. What day is that? Rosh Hashanah. Why? The pasuk we just read. Because Levim ran around telling Bnei Yisrael, well, don't cry, guys. Kadosh Hashem. Today's a holy day. Al tisablu v'al tivku. You're not allowed to cry in Rosh Hashanah. Now, ladies and gentlemen, halacha l'maisa, this is Rosh Hashanah, right? What are we going to be doing? We're going to be crying about our averas? Absolutely not. It's usher. It's usher to cry on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, it's true that if some people hold that if you're crying, I remember, in yeshiva, they used to say like this: if you cry, you're not allowed to cry out of sadness. You're allowed to cry out of emotion. And there's a very big difference. If you're saying a tefillah with incredible emotion, but nothing to do with sadness, regret, bitterness, unhappiness, that's not okay. But if it's just out of strong emotion, that is okay to cry on Rosh Hashanah. Because I think it actually fits in the puzzle. Al tisablu, don't be an avelist, al tivku, don't cry. Meaning the kind of crying that's a sad kind of crying. So we can't. It's a day that everything's at stake. A day where Hashem is going to determine exactly what our year is going to look like. But we can't cry about it. We could say, Hashem, we want you to be king. And we could cry as we say, we want you to be king. We could cry and laugh. We could cry and sing. But we can't cry out of any bit of sadness. I'll also have you know the next pasuk. So what happened after Bnei Yisrael listened to Nehemiah reading this Sefer Torah on this wooden bima? The Levim again running around saying, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't be so sad, it's Rosh Hashanah. And then, you know what Nehemiah tells the people? Go do which mitzvah? Not shofar, not tefillah, not Torah, not tshuva, what? Mishloach manos. It's a pasuk in Nehemiah. Go, ichlu mashmanim, eat fat foods. Right, so Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to eat no calories in Rosh Hashanah. It says it here. Eat fat foods, mashmanim. Ushasum abtekim, and drink sweet drinks. Vishilchu manos. Vishilach manos. Vishilchu manos. Send foods to people who don't have what they need. So send packages of food to people who don't have. Ki kadosh hayom ladoneinu. Al teyatzu, do not be sad today in Rosh Hashanah. Ki chedvas Hashem, the joy of Hashem will be your strength. In other words, Rosh Hashanah, as emotionally laden as it can be and ought to be, cannot be a sad day. And that's not easy. Especially if somebody really realizes what's at stake and how much there is, and how much there is to think about and to earn on Rosh Hashanah. Nevertheless, that's something to keep in mind. So, if I could put a twist. So what do we see from this? Rabbeinu Yonah is bringing this. He brings this story. Now, he doesn't quote the whole story. He just quoted one pasuk from Nehemiah. The point is, when the Torah is being read, you hear Torah, you hear Divrei Torah, the goal is not to say, wow, that was brilliant. Well, how intellectually scintillating that was. I'm happy for you if you're intellectually scintillated. What we need to have is that Torah that we hear should change us, should improve us, should go into our minds and hearts so that we can be elevated and change our ways and improve our ways and do be misakin our minds, our thoughts, our actions. That's the goal of listening to Torah. And the Igeres Ramban has this in a very different kind of way. The Igeres Ramban writes that it's a good thing to learn Torah. All of you do. But listen to what he says. Kasher takum min ha-sefer. When you get up from learning, you take the sefer, you close it, give it a kiss, put it on the shelf, and you stand up and walk away. Listen to what the Ramban writes in his Igeres to his son. Techapes ba'asher lamadata. Seek out something from that which you just learned. You learned the halacha of whatever it is. Try to fulfill or try to do that halacha. Let's say you go to Rabbi Orlean, you listened online to Rabbi Orlean's Borer Shir from last year. Go to the kitchen, take out some fruits, mix them together and practice your, you know, do it right. Whatever it is. I don't think you have to do that. But find things to apply what you learned. You know what that's called in progressive educational techniques? It's called multimodality. Okay, my wife took this course in Orton Gillingham, which is the reading technique for children with dyslexia and reading difficulties. And the way they teach letters and sounds is like this. First, you look at it on the paper. Then you say it. Then you make a shape with your finger in the air. Then you write it. So now you have the student who's has whatever language difficulties they have. They are trying to absorb the concept of the th sound, th, both by reading it with their eyes, by doing it with their fingers in the air, by writing it, by saying th, th, th. And if you have all those things, you have four different modalities that you are going to, hopefully, some neuron in your brain will pick it up, and you'll realize that a th is a th. Well, if the neural pathways work in that way for reading, neural pathways work in the same way. When we learn something and we put our learning and our understanding to practice, that's going to enhance our learning, and more importantly, it's going to make the learning reach its goal of actually translating into what we do and how we live. And now, we're up to the fifth. So the fourth derech to come to tshuva is when you hear the Torah, is by being impacted for the Torah that we hear. The fifth, and this is really the key one for right now, is aseres yimei tshuva. And I believe, if any of you have a shari tshuva at home, I urge you, you will have a different aseres yimei tshuva if you take this out. It's shari tshuva from Rabbeinu Yonah in his second chelek. There are four halakim. The second chelek is all we're covering a good part of the second chelek right now. This evening we're covering the main points of the second chelek. In Os Yud Dalet, he talks about aseres yimei tshuva, what they should be. And if you look at his words carefully, you'll just have a profound appreciation for what aseres yimei tshuva could be. So he says, aseres yimei tshuva, of course, that's itself an independent thing that should and ought motivate a person to come to do tshuva. Why? Very simply. Because we realize what's at stake. We realize that everything that we did is written down, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now bringing everything into the ledger. Al kol ne'alam, even on things that are, what's ne'alam? Even on things that are hidden that we might not even remember, that were hidden from other people's eyes, from our own eyes. All those things we have to give a din v'cheshbon on. And then he says the following. Just the way he says it in such detail, which I can't do it because it's written in more of a poetic Hebrew. Imagine the following. Imagine you're on trial. So when you're on trial for something big, not for jaywalking, you're on trial, what's on your mind the week of the trial? You're not just depressed. No, depressed doesn't help you because you don't want to be depressed. You want to win. Okay, so being depressed doesn't get you anywhere. You want to win. How do you get to win? You research, you Google, you analyze, you speak to people, you figure out what kind of game plan you could create for yourselves to have a winning game plan, to have a success, whatever, they get the testimonies, well organized, get your arguments, how are you going to respond to the counter arguments. That's exactly what we have to do during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. It's not a time to be sad. No. No sadness, only work. Hard work, focus, direction. What could I do? What strategies could I do to improve? Okay, you need a little bit of charata. That's one of the numerous parts of tshuva, but that's not the focus. The focus is how can I be proactive and productive to think of what can I do? And listen to what he says. And what I'm going to say now is not easy to hear, but it's not so difficult to hear either. V'ra'ui l'chol yirei elokim, it's appropriate for anybody who has yiras shamayim, who realizes what's at stake, l'ma'et ba'asakav, to limit their business. Meaning, I don't think it means that you have to, if you have an 8-hour work day, you have to leave work 45 minutes early doing a aseres yimei tshuva. Chances are you have to make up days because you took off Thursday and Friday, and then Sukkot is coming, also another Thursday, Friday, and some Haftarah is another Thursday, Friday. But if there are other things that you need to take care of them after aseres yimei tshuva. Why? Because during aseres yimei tshuva, there is stuff to do. There is stuff to do. Likvo bayom v'alayla itim, bikoveya azman, times, every day and every night, his bodate. Rabbi Orlean is telling everybody to do his bodidus. I'm not a breastlover, gentlemen and ladies. I'm not a breastlover. This is Rabbeinu Yonah. We have to do his bodidus. Not all year, not for so long, but during Aseres Yimei Tshuva, we have to sit in our rooms and think and try to do a little bit of an introspection and be involved with tshuva. And then he comes to another point about Aseres Yimei Tshuva. I had a Rebbe, some of you know him, Rabbi Yitzchak Kohn, a very wonderful and special tzaddik we have here in our yeshiva. He was my ninth grade Rebbe. And there's one line, and numerous lines, one of them that I remember that he used to tell us when we were ninth graders in MTA. And he would say the following, I think this is before Giuliani cleaned up the MTA system. He used to say, you're on the train. Everybody on the train is crazy, and they're all talking to themselves anyway. So you can also talk to yourself. Take a sefer and learn. Take a sitter and daven. Everyone else is crazy, you can also be crazy. That's what he told us when we were in ninth grade. So, if you want to do that all year long, I'm not going to tell you what to do. During Aseres Yimei Tshuva, that's what you should do. When you walk down the street, down Amsterdam Avenue, down Bennett Avenue, down Broadway Avenue, you're on the 1 train, you're on the 8 train, you're on the BX whatever bus, talk. Not to yourself, talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, V'ha'es es ratzon. This is a time of ratzon. V'ha'tfila nishma asba. V'ha'tfila nishma. This is a time. Aseres Mechuv is a time that tfila is more listened to. We learn it from psukim that you're familiar with. Dishu Hashem b'himatzo. Call out to Hashem when He is present. Wait a second. Didn't my three-year-old come back from nursery singing Hashem is here? Hashem is here. Hashem is truly everywhere. Hashem is everywhere. What do you mean, call out Hashem when He is here? So Chazal were wondering the same question. It doesn't fit in with Uncle Moishi. The answer is, Chazal say, Eilu asara yamim shebein Rosh Hashanah liyom HaKippurim. Hashem is more present between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Hashem is more present. That means the power of our tefillos are more effective for that week between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur than any other time of the year. And therefore, what a waste it would be if we didn't take advantage of this koach hatfil that we have for a limited time offer, which will expire at the end of Yom Kippur. So all day, just walk around talking. If you want to put, you know, now it's easy, because nowadays we have cell phones. So put a cell phone and just, I remember when I was in, also when I was in high school, I remember going ice skating. So we were going ice skating somewhere in Manhattan with a bunch of my friends, and we realized it was getting dark, and we had to daven mincha. You know, it's 4:30, it's, you know, the middle of the day. So I'm trying to find a place to, you know, quiet place in the middle of an ice skating, whatever, on the side of an ice skating to daven mincha, but it's not so easy. And my friend, I never realized it was just so brilliant and so simple. He walked over to, when they used to, now they don't have payphones anymore. So he walked over to a payphone, went into a payphone booth, took the phone, pressed some numbers, and then it was daven shmoneh esrei on the phone. So he looked normal. He had his privacy. Very smart thing. So nowadays we have cell phones, we could do it all the time. So nowadays, you don't even have a selfie. You see people talking to themselves. You know, they have a little Bluetooth. It's the funniest thing. You see a guy walking down the street just talking to himself. You're like wondering, wow, whoever, you know, he must be, his other personality must be really interesting. One is a Bluetooth. So that's what we should do. That's our goal for our Sesame Chua. Talk, talk, talk. Ask Hashem continually, continuously to ask Hashem for anything and for everything. One or two more thoughts. The sixth and the final, well, I told you there was really a seventh, but that was what we spoke about earlier. The first thing we said tonight is that what should motivate a person to do tshuva? Nothing. That's the ideal. That's how we started tonight's shiur. That was the first. Now we had six more things. The sixth is, well, what were these six things? The first thing was that you should hopefully have nothing that needs you to push you to do tshuva. The first thing to get us to do tshuva was when we have troubles. The second thing was in old age. The third thing was when we hear Chachamim speak, and if we commit ourselves to what they say. The fourth thing is when we listen to Torah. The fifth thing to get us to do tshuva is doing Aser Simei Tshuva. And the final motivating impetus that Rabbeinu Yonah counts is the realization, and it's almost like the first thing. The realization that, again, it's not when we get old, but the realization that we're here for a limited time offer. Just like Aser Simei Tshuva, our limited time offer, we're here for a limited time. We have to make use of it. And realizing that we want to be productive and we want to be able to, you know, the Chazal have the funny conversation. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Shuv Yom Echad Lefnei Mitascha. Do tshuva the day before you die. Well, what's the obvious question? Yeah, that's what the Talmidim asked him in Shabbos Kufnun Gimel Amud Aleph. They said, Rabbeinu, a person doesn't know when he's going to die. He says, exactly. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. So do tshuva today, because who knows what's going to be tomorrow. And that's, it's a pasuk in Kohelet, b'chol eis, every moment, yuba, gadecha levanim, your clothing should be white. It means every day a person should ideally, we say actually in Shema, those of you who say, before Shema al-Hamita, we have a little line there. We ask Hashem to forgive anybody else who did an avera against me, and Hashem should forgive us. And if we use that little moment, even a moment, to try to contemplate a little bit of tshuva, that could really, in a sense, be a way for us to have every day, you know, a day that's a productive and a growing day. Even if the day wasn't, at least the night, you know, when we finish the day, it could be. I'd like to finish with one nice thought. I think it's a nice thought. We have in the Torah the brachos and the klalos. And Hashem says some funny things before the brachas and the klalos. Hashem says, Re'e anochi nosen lefneichem ayom bracha uklala. And I'm giving you bracha and klala, chayim and maves. And Hashem says, I think it was in last week's parasha, one of the previous recent week's parashas, uvacharta b'chayim. So it's sort of like if I say, guys, you know, here's dessert. You could have artichoke salad, or some double fudge caramel dipped sugar coated chocolate bombs. You know what I would suggest? I think you should try the chocolate bombs. Yeah, of course. You're not going to have artichoke salad if you could have chocolate bombs. So what is Hashem saying? V'charta b'chayim. You know what? I put, you know, there's chayim and there's maves. You know, my suggest, I highly urge you, you know, to try the v'charta b'chayim. I think it'll fit you better. It's pretty obvious. So the Sifri, Chazal say a beautiful, beautiful explanation with a beautiful mashal. He says there's a, it's not so obvious. It's not so. It's not a case of artichokes against chocolate bombs. It's a question of, when we start on a road, the mashal that the Sifri gives is, you're starting on a road. And at the beginning of a road, it looks a little rocky. There's another road right next to it that's smooth, easy to walk on, well-paved. So we might think it might be easier, it might be more convenient, it might be quicker if we just take the smoother way. Sometimes we need somebody to tell us, this looks a little bit rocky, might be a little bit hard in the beginning, but you know what? After you walk, you know, around that first curve, the second curve, after that, it's going to be much smoother. Oh, the smooth road right over here on the other side? Yeah. It looks smooth now, but after the, you know, on a curve, right after the line of vision ends, right a little bit after that, there are mountains and there are valleys and there are twists and there are turns. It's rocky and the pavement stops and it's dirt and it's gravel and it's muddy. We need Hashem to tell us. We need the B'chayim to B'chayim to... Hashem has to sort of tell us, sometimes doing mitzvahs and committing ourselves in a little bit more than we are now, it does look like it's a little bit of the harder road to follow. It's not always the easiest way. But that's why we need the guidance. That's why Hashem tells us, B'chayim to B'chayim. It might look a little hard, but really... it's really going to be, in the long run, in our best interest, and it's going to be best for us. Be'ezus Hashem, we should all have the strength to have a simcha dika Rosh Hashanah. I'm sure we'll have a Yiras Shemayim dika Rosh Hashanah, but we should also have a simcha dika Rosh Hashanah, and we should have all of our tefillahs answered, and we should be able to use the Aseres Me'etshuva productively. And the Bali Musa used to call the days of Aseres Me'etshuva, the golden ateg. Tag is a day, teg are days, golden ateg, golden days. There used to be a certain Bali Musa who said, if I had a few more days of Aseres Me'etshuva, I'd manage to be able to reach Nevuah. That's what they used to say, the Bali Musa. So, I don't know if anybody here is going to reach Nevuah. If you do, please let me know so I could have a number of questions I'd like to inquire. And we should use our days productively and take advantage of the wonderful gifts that we have. We should all be zochet to Shnas Chaim v'Shalom, Tzivich Tzima Tova. Hashem should answer all of our tefillos for us as individuals and as a community, the Tov, and for wonderful things for all of Kal Yisrael. Tzivich Tzima Tova.